to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, it is Monday. Welcome to the final day of March. It is Monday, March 31st, and we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. It's Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Monday. Hi, Vix.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
It's going.
Yeah.
And it is stretch drive time now. There is no time to blink. As the old general manager used to say, the Flames will be drinking from a fire hose to finish off the season. That's a Brad Treliving TM term. And so here's the situation where the Flames are right now as a new week begins. We know that they lose that game Saturday to the Oilers 3-2 in overtime. And now they sit 7 points back of two teams, seven back of St. Louis, and seven back of Minnesota. They've got three games in hand on the Blues and two games in hand on the Wild. Text lines open at 960-960 because we want to hear from you this hour, and we want to hear from you over the next number of minutes. How are you feeling about this team's playoff push? How are you feeling about them with 10 games to go? Are you feeling optimistic, pessimistic? Are they done? Are they still in control? Like, how do you feel about things between now and the end of the regular season? Vix, for the first time, you can't make the argument that on March 31st they control their own destiny, because right now, and that could change between now and, you know, 4 days from now, but right now they do not. Right now they would need help from two other teams, at least one of those teams, to make the playoffs. And as you get your answers in on the text line, 960-960, here are your latest playoff odds at the two places we've been firing odds at you. Starting with Money Puck, they've got St. Louis at 88.4% to make the playoffs. They've got Minnesota at 87% to make the playoffs. They've got Calgary at 15.5% and Vancouver at 9.7%. So that's the way Money Puck's got it. And over at Hockey Reference, they've got Minnesota and St. Louis swap. They've got Minnesota at 91.7%. They've got the Blues at 86.4%. And they've got Calgary right around the same spot, 15.9%. Instead of 15.5%, and Vancouver even lower at 5.7% to make the playoffs. So Money Puck has St. Louis, Minnesota, then a big drop to Calgary and Vancouver. Hockey Reference has Minnesota, St. Louis, then a big drop to Calgary and Vancouver. We'll get to the text very shortly, but Vix, how are you feeling about this as the Flames enter their final 10-game stretch of the regular season?
Honestly, not great. Anytime you need to get help, things get a little spooky, a little scary. And the fact that you're trying to chase down either a team that has won literally nine straight, or B, the team that's technically ahead of them based on points percentage, based on one game at hand. So yes, you've got an option here now if you're the Flames, where before, for the longest time, it was like, oh, can you catch the St. Louis Blues? Now the Minnesota Wild, who've only won five of their past 10 games, a little bit down to earth. But there's a reason why each of those sites has either the Blues or the Wild up over 80% and the Calgary Flames under 20%. Like, this is an uphill climb. And when you start trying to do the math as to what the Flames need to get to 94, 95, 96 points, whatever that number happens to be. And it's amazing how quickly that number can change.
It's ramped up pretty.
That's what happens when you win nine straight.
Exactly.
I mean, in all fairness, yes. And let's not even just go nine straight. They've only lost two games in regulation in their past 19 games.
Wow, hey.
Coming out of that Four Nations, again, I love that Four Nations break. 15-2-2 since the Four Nations.
That is
insane.
That is ridiculous. It's not quite what they did in 2019, but it's not far off.
I mean, it's certainly got the Flames in a bind, certainly got the Vancouver Canucks in a bind. And so to go back to your question, how am I feeling? Not great. Because the Flames are basically going to need what kicked off the season for them. 5-0 run, best six-game start in franchise history, except for they need to close out with something similar over that 10-game stretch. Because if you want to get to 94 points, you're looking at 7-2-1-ish. You're looking at 6-2-2 to get to 96. You're basically 7-1-2 or 8-2-0, however you want to work it out. We're talking about a team after that season kicking off six-game streak, point streak.
Yeah. They're essentially a
team. So they need to kick it up again. That's why I don't feel particularly... And I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like... St. Louis has really sort of affected this as well. Because they're...
What they've done, yeah.
What they've done. And it's not even what they've done just on the flat surface. It's how they've gone about doing it, too. They've been one of the most dominant teams.
They're a wagon. Like, there's no question about
and,
it.
And much like we saw Vancouver for a little stretch of time, they're turning losses into wins... I'd say overtime losses, but they don't have any of those over the course of the past nine games. This is a very much an uphill climb.
Yeah, that's the way I'd phrase it. It's an uphill climb. Yeah, I think it's going to be a difficult uphill climb. The elimination number is down to 6.5, so 13 points lost or gained by either St. Louis or Minnesota will eliminate the Flames. So that they're down to the short strokes at this point. Now, the games in hand help, and the games in hand make it so that there is still plenty on the table and everything still to play for the Flames. And so as much as I do think, because, and it's 6.5, because I'm essentially assuming the Blues and the Wild will win the tiebreak. St. Louis has got a 4-game edge, and Minnesota's got a 7-game edge or 7-win edge when it comes to the first tiebreaker. Winning in regulation is the number one tiebreaker for a playoff tie. So the Flames essentially will need to make up 8 points on both the Blues and the Wild to get in. A tie won't do it. And so that's why the elimination number down to 6.5 or 13 points. It is not impossible. And here's what I will say. You know, after this 2-game stretch where they play Colorado Monday and Utah Tuesday, you know, they've got some opponents. I mean, they do have Vegas coming in here on Saturday, but they do have some opponents that start to become a little bit more beatable. They've got 8 points on the table against Anaheim and San Jose of their final 20 points. So they do have some winnable games that could be considered their games in hand. So I do think the Flames are going to make this I do think they're going to make it interesting, or at the very least, I think they're going to make it so that they're not officially eliminated until late. And they're going to fight right to the finish. And I don't, with Nazem Kadri and what he has been doing, with Mackenzie Weegar and how high his compete level runs, with a couple of other guys on this group, I don't think they're going to wave the white flag, and I don't think they're going to go quietly into the night. And maybe that doesn't turn into 7-2-1. Maybe it does, but I do think this team is going to do the same thing they've done through their first 72 games, and that is fight their asses off on a nightly basis, not be out of games on a very regular basis, and just continue to roll out the identity that we've seen from them. And yeah, they're behind the eight ball. They've got an uphill climb. There's a reason why, you know, you could look at 3-4 other sites as well. You know, all very slim odds for them to make the playoffs right now. But I feel like if you're Nazem Kadri or Ryan Huska or anybody else in that room, like, it's a Han Solo moment. Like, never tell me the odds.
Yep.
I feel like they've got a really kind of steely focus, and all they have, not all, but they have run very consistently all year on, okay, count us out at your own peril. And they can harness that again here as they go into the final eighth of their season.
This isn't necessarily going to be the right phrase, but it's going to be the one I use. If you're a member of the Calgary Flames, you're in that locker room, you have to have a level of self-deception right now. You need to fool yourself into thinking that it's not a 15% chance, that it's a 50% chance, that it's a coin flip. And you need to go in with the mentality that you basically need to steal as many points as possible. You don't necessarily need to run the table, but you cannot afford. You said it right there. 13-ish points is the magic number.
13 will do it.
You've got to have a layer of obliviousness to what your situation is. And I think you can do that a little bit because you have so many games in hand. And listen, we know how many times the Calgary Flames have gone on a 3- or 4-game winning streak this season. It hasn't been ample. I can count them on one hand. You're going to need something like that, first of all. But I think what can inspire a little bit more confidence is if I'm Nazem Kadri, if I'm Mackenzie Weegar, I can internally go, all right, well, we sweep these three games in hand, we're 1 point back.
Yep. Here's what the text line has to say. Let's just dive in. Lots of text. How you feeling? Brooklyn in Spruce View, Alberta says the playoff push will be tough, but with the games in hand and their no quit attitude that they've had all season, it'll be an entertaining finish either way. That's kind of where I am. I do think it's going to be an interesting fight to the finish,
yep.
Even though, you know, if you just to take a quick glance at the standings, maybe it doesn't feel like it's going to be an interesting fight to the finish. I still think there are a couple more chapters to be written here from a Flames standpoint.
Well, and even just imagine the boost, because they're going to use one of those three games Monday night against Colorado Avalanche. You go into Denver and you come away with 2 points after two very disappointing losses in your last two outings. To me, if I'm on the team, you come away with those 2 points. My confidence jumps right back up to where it was when we had won 4 straight. That's just a matter of fact. Going into Colorado and beating them in their own bar, knowing what kind of wagon that team can be, suddenly you close that gap by 2 more points. You still got 2 games in hand over St. Louis, 1 over Minnesota. Maybe it's a different ballgame from a mentality standpoint.
This reads nervous, anxious, but hopeful. Jeff in Okotoks says they might be able to carve out 12 to 13 points, likely 10. Not enough, not with St. Louis on their 9-game run. Mike in Calgary says a heck of a lot more entertaining watching them fight for a playoff spot than losing every game intentionally to try to get a higher pick. I do not get all the people wanting to lose. A high draft pick is never a guarantee. All those years in Edmonton are an example. Dale says, bleep sakes, it's over since 1989. If this organization has a chance to rise above, they fail every time. This reads from James, as an Oilers fan, I want the Flames to make it. Battle of Alberta playoffs is the greatest thing in sports, and only having gotten it once in my lifetime that I recall, I want it again. However, being a realist, I don't see it happening. If they do make it, they'll be a very scary playoff team. They've been playing playoff hockey all year. That's from James in Lethbridge. I mean, that old adage of you got to be red hot to get in. And sometimes it matters, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, there have been times when teams have been red hot and then get blown out of the water.
Peak too early.
Exactly. But there have been times when teams get red hot and have been playing at a certain level down the stretch, and they're able to carry that over into the postseason. Blues, Kings in 2011, a few other examples. 2011? No, 2013. 2013.
I would have said 2012.
Nope, 2012. It's 2012.
Oh,
yep,
yay.
You're right.
I win.
2011 was Bruins, 2012 was Kings, 2013 was Hawks, 2014 was Kings. Anyway, Sahil in Calgary says, realistically, the Flames need 15 of a possible 20, which, while not impossible, we've not seen them do that all season. I'm not feeling hopeful.
Do you think they have to get to 95, or you think it's north of that now? Like, so here, let me break it down for you.
95 would mean that St. Louis would go 4 and, like, all St. Louis would need to do is go 4-3 in their final 7.
And they're right? At 95, yeah. Because if, like, I did a little quick math, and it's hilarious to, like, even if they only go 3-4 the rest of the way, which we're talking about a team that just won, or is continually trying to win their 10th straight game. They go 3-4, that still puts them at 93. So if you're the Flames, you need to go 6-2-2.
Yeah. And again, that's not completely out of the question, but...
And to get to 96, they'd have to go 7-1-2.
Yeah. I mean, the math is not in their favor. It's really not in either of Calgary or Vancouver's favor right now, there's no doubt. Gord says, despite their best efforts, they will not make the postseason. A very good effort, but not this year. Kelly and Copperfield, win tonight with 2 points. No overtime. I'm okay. Lose or only 1 point, I'm done. Zero chance if they have anything less than 2 points from here on out.
I'm not even concerned if it's overtime, because like we kind of just talked about.
Yeah, I don't think
getting the tiebreaker aren't all that high. So just come away with 2, regardless of how long it takes.
Is going 7-3 enough to get in if St. Louis and Minnesota go 500? So I don't think it would be, because let me just quickly do the math. So that would get the Flames to 94 points, which would mean the Blues would just need to get to 94, which would be them going 3-3-1. So 500 for them, St. Louis would get in, and 500 for the Wild, that would get them in as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, they'd have to go for the Blues and Wild to go 500. The Flames would have to go better than 7-3.
Yeah.
Probably have to go 7-2-1.
And again, that goes back to not that they need to go on a six-game point streak like they did to kick off the year, but you're looking at a run very similar to that. Play their best hockey at the beginning of the season. Play your best hockey at the end of the season just to give yourself a chance.
By the way, that text was from Tahir. Rob says, how am I feeling about this team going into the last stretch? I'm a Flames fan. Optimistically pessimistic. It's a real thing. That's from Robin Medicine Hat. Dale and Drumheller, I'm feeling cautiously optimistic due to Minnesota's injury troubles and underlying numbers. You have to assume the Flames win their games in hand, whether it's through playing weaker teams or teams that have solidified their playoff position, and they still have one game against the Wild, putting them 1 point behind them. In this optimistic fan's mind, can Conroy dress as a face-off specialist? They do have, and the thing about Minnesota is they do have that game in hand, that head-to-head game between now and the end of the regular season.
The old four-pointer now. Let me ask you this, and apologies if I'm going to spoil a text that comes in, but do you feel more confident in catching Minnesota than you do St. Louis? Minnesota, since that Four Nations break, 8-9-1.
Yeah, I would say that they would be a team that I'd be slightly more confident about, but they only have
the one game in hand.
That's right. You only have the two games in hand, but you do have the head-to-head. Like, if you were to say, what team do they have the better chance of chasing down? To me, it would be Minnesota. It's crazy how it's changed, right? Like, it was Vancouver for the longest time that we were all focused on, and then, you know, a few people on the text line have been like, St. Louis. And now, you know, most people have shifted their focus from St. Louis to Minnesota, knowing they've had their injury troubles, and they've really struggled since the Four Nations break.
It's going to be an interesting chase, even just separate the Flames from it, from where we are and in this market, to see what Minnesota and St. Louis do, where they end up. And we can't necessarily sleep on Vancouver either, who's at 81 points. Calgary has two games in hand over them, but this is going to be a heck of a chase. But the odds are what they are because of the situation they face. And again, three games in hand on St. Louis, two over Minnesota with a head-to-head remaining. It's not, the book isn't shut, but there's some work to be done.
You're running out of pages
for
sure.
Yes.
Henry in Calgary, I strongly believe the Flames can make the playoffs as long as they play 60 and protect their leads until the end. This says from Mick, I'm completely disgusted. The Flames have decided to pause the rebuild by chasing the playoffs, continuing the previous 30 years of mushy middle mediocrity. They need to draft top players to build around. They have Wolf and a couple second line forwards and Zeri and Coronado to build around with Parekh coming. They need to draft a number one center, not chase playoff revenue. It's all Blues. I don't think, Mick, they have paused their rebuild. They just didn't make any moves at the deadline, and that's okay. You can still make those moves in the summertime if you want to. This reads, Pat, the playoffs seem pretty unlikely at this point, but overall I'd say it was a fun and encouraging season for both the team and fans. The biggest takeaway is that Dustin Wolf has proven he's a legit number one franchise goalie you can build around. Matt Coronado showed he can score at the highest level and will only get better with time. It was a tough second half for Zeri, but you can still see the high-end skill and vision he brings. There's definitely a player there. The draft pick situation is what it is, but with the Flames pick on pace to finish in a similar range to New Jersey's, it basically cancels out. Would love to see some of the younger guys down the stretch, players like Stromgren, Brstevich, and Poirier. It'd be great to get a glimpse of what the future might look like, or who knows, maybe somebody by the name of Zane Parekh, seeing as how Saginaw has allowed 17 goals in
not
the
ideal
first two games against Erie. That's not, you don't usually win like that, hey?
Last I checked, there aren't too many teams coming away with even a split, giving up 17-2 to kick off a playoff series. I haven't done all the math on that. Haven't checked every series in the history of the Ontario Hockey League. Doesn't bode well, though, that way.
Rob and Auburn Bay feeling super optimistic. If they get 1 point tonight, they're in.
Ooh, bold. So let me float this by you. Yes, two devastating losses they're coming off of, but they're still 4-1-1 in the past six. That's 9 of a possible 12 points. They continue that level through the rest of the season. They get to 95. That's a chance.
They haven't done that all year.
Hey, they just did it for six games. Just do it for 10 more.
I mean, hey,
come on.
As simple as
that. Glass half full.
Adam says, stick a fork in them. They're medium rare. Not shoe leather, but getting there. Pat, you answer your question in one word, frustrated. I love the effort and compete against the Stars, but there's nothing more infuriating than losing to those clowns up north. Who cares about moral victories at this point? One would have to enjoy being in peak pain to cheer for the Flames with all the ups and downs this season and the constant mediocrity. They won't make the playoffs, but I love them anyways. Like Vince McMahon back in the day, Flames got no chance in hell. Okay. That's what you got.
Any wrestling reference, Pat's going to read.
Well, I'm just reading them in order. But
okay.
Broden and Airdrie, I feel good about the Flames, but terrible about the Blues. Wild is their only hope. Matt says, I think the Flames have a better chance of catching the Wild than the Blues. The Wild have been struggling. The Flames have one game against them remaining. So if they can actually win their games in hand and win the head-to-head, then they're only 1 point back of Minnesota. And I feel like they can make that up easier against the Wild than the Blues. It starts tonight. This reads, team's cooked and nothing will change unless they do a proper rebuild, but Murray will never let that happen. Derek in Edmonton says, tonight's game against Colorado and tomorrow's against Utah will be a big determination in whether they continue to push to catch Wild Card 2. If they get 0 points in these games, I don't see them having a chance of catching anyone. Yeah, I mean, I agree. If they go 0-for in this Monday, Tuesday stretch, I think we can start to say this is over.
I've already started my draft prep, so we'll be fine in that sense.
Sean in Belmont, though the team has played with grit and determination, it feels like reality has set in regarding the playoff picture. I hope Conroy can sell high in the offseason on veterans and continue to acquire picks or younger talent. Big picture speaking, this roster cannot compete with the big guns in the NHL. That comes from Sean. Corey says, stick a fork in it. They'll never catch the Blues. Unfortunately, mushy middle again. No playoffs and no good high pick, especially giving your middle of the pack pick to Montreal. Number 17 aside, it seems to me the Flames are short about 3 or 4 20-goal guys. What do you see? It seems like Calgary has a lot of shots into the chest protector in the slot where contenders have shooters that pick corners. Additionally, all the playoff-bound teams are almost always above real 500. If you don't win more than you lose, you next to never make the playoffs. That comes from Corey, and that is very true. You know, with the Flames and their 12 non-regulation losses, they've lost 38 and won 34.
Yeah, I actually don't mind that quote-unquote true. I don't even want to call it quote-unquote because it literally is just wins versus losses. But like you look at the St. Louis Blues, there they would be 40 and 35. You look at the Minnesota Wild, they'd be 41 and 33.
Yep.
So that is a real thing.
There's been a few years where a team can sneak in. I mean, you remember the shortened season Montreal got in.
That was wonky, though.
It was super wonky. Washington last year had 11 non-regulation losses, so they were 40 and 42. So they did make it in as the final seed in the Eastern Conference that year. That year I'm referring to the 56-game season. That was Montreal making the playoffs and going to the Stanley Cup final. And they had 24 wins and 32 losses that year because of 11 in overtime or a shootout. Neil in Calgary, the need to win 4 more games than St. Louis or Minnesota with only 10 games remaining seems like a daunting task. I think Minnesota needs to be in their sight. St. Louis is playing too hot. I think there needs to be a lot of puck luck, which they haven't had a lot of. This says from Brian and Airdrie. Good day, gentlemen. Just wanted to weigh in on my thoughts. Unfortunately, I'm feeling very pessimistic. They really haven't proven to us that they're more than a 500 team all year. Only 10 games to go, doing some quick math. They'd have to win at least 8, and that's still not a guaranteed spot. I will say they've made it pretty exciting to watch all year, especially being a rebuild year. I'll say I'm very proud of the whole entire group for all they've done this year, but I just don't see it. Jared in Seton, give me a scenario in recent or ancient history where a team with that long of odds to make the playoffs this late in the year has worked out. The 2014 Kings. Well, the 2014 Kings were not long playoff odds. That you're talking about the 2012 Kings, and they were going on their run, and they had a ridiculous second half of the season under Daryl, if you remember. So by this time, it felt pretty clear LA was going to make the playoffs in 2012. In 2014, I think they were sixth or fifth.
Yeah,
or
they
sixth,
were
much more comfortably in than 2012.
Hey, they're long odds for a reason. It doesn't happen every single year where you're trying to chase down 8 to 10 points over a team or two that are just slightly ahead of you. But math. Still technically there.
Joey in Blackie says, the boys need to stay positive. When the Blues decide to lose another game, it's going to be a couple. That's Calgary's time to strike. Let's go, Flames.
Do you think that? Do you think one kind of undoes the Blues a little bit? I feel like they're feeling too good.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily expecting one to turn into more a ton. That's for sure. This reads, I was one of the fans that wanted so badly for that couple of weeks to really mean something and grab the eighth spot. That did not happen. This is only a playoff team if you're totally deluded. I don't feel good about it at all because it isn't one. Cue the Mission Impossible music. Fast forward message going up in smoke because I don't know what this is trying to say, but in what part of your life do you delude yourself like you're asking the Flames to do? Again, voice to text can be very difficult to read. Trent in Calgary, hope they can step up and play against the underrated teams. That seems to be an issue with this team. If so, they've got this, hoping and praying. That comes from Trent.
You absolutely have to steal points off of Utah, Anaheim, San Jose, Anaheim
steal
again,
points.
San
That's
Jose.
Not well, you need to take care of your business yes. against those teams and steal points from whether it's Vegas or Colorado or those teams. You need to win all the games you're supposed to win, and you're going to have to scalp some against the really good teams in this.
Imagine if LA's home and cooled and locked into their position on April 17th and sit half their team.
This reads from Dylan and Revy. Why are we even still talking about the playoffs? Are you just killing airtime? Daryl says, I think they can make the playoffs, but tonight they must win this game because all the other games they have left are winnable. So if they can steal one tonight and then beat Minnesota in that 4-point game, I think they're there. Ray says, I'm pessimistic. I totally respect this team, but they're playing way above their head. What else we got here at 960, 960? If the Wild lose tonight and the Flames win, that leaves Flames 5 points back with 2 games in hand and a head-to-head. This says 7 winnable games. San Jose, Anaheim, Utah, and Minnesota, plus LA will likely sit their stars in the makeup game as they'll have clinched second by then. I know saying that if they won against Edmonton, I'd be feeling better, but I still think Edmonton will slide. If they had win, they'd be talking about 3 teams within range. As it sits now, Minnesota's the target. I still have faith they can catch them. Either way, it's great hockey. Brad in Calgary, all these people that talk about the Flames tanking makes me wonder if any of them have ever played a team sport before. This is, why does Team Tank pretend they didn't turn over most of their roster from last year, start a rookie goalie all year, and not reach at the deadline to pretend they're contenders? They outkicked their coverage this season. Rip your RIP your cap 2 years into a 3 to 5 year plan. Breathe. Jason in Vancouver says, it's very interesting listening to the text coming in. I'll definitely tell you from the Canucks fan base, the proverbial fat lady has sung, I wish you guys all the best. Danny in YYC, I'm expecting the Flames need 14 points, which is going to be very hard. St. Louis has been given way too many points that are ref-assisted, plus the stolen ref games such as the Stars game. I'm really happy with Connie and the Flames team. There's the conspiracy theories.
Thank you.
Francesca says, can you believe we're even having this conversation? I love it. This team has already succeeded. They've shown so much character. Kevin and Carstairs, Pat, I sure hope they can make it. They've really worked hard. I loved watching the games. They're competing. I hope they do well. I really find it fascinating that 3 games behind in an 82-game series makes them a horrible team. That's 3% of the 82 games. And to be those 3 games could have been anywhere within the season that could have been made up. So they did amazing this year. I appreciate the level of effort. They're putting pieces together. People need to be patient. Cam, by the way, I'd hit record here. This reads, 35 years of losing. The organization doesn't care as long as they can charge you $20 for a drink in their new flashy stadium. That's from Jake, who's very pessimistic. Too bad they're not in the East this year. They'd be a lock. I know we're talking about the Flames, but who do you think makes the final wild card in the East? That comes from Jay in West Springs. I'm going to just Columbus or Montreal is who I'm hoping for. Cam in Tuscany, I don't think the Flames make it. Just going to enjoy this last stretch and cheer my team on to the finish line. Thompson says, sorry, boys, the Edmonton game was their best chance. Looking forward to seeing a couple more young guns. This says from Dave and Airdrie, good effort. Worried they'll be having the same discussion 365 days from now. Ben says, put Klapka with Kadri and Pospisil. Let the big man do what he can do. And finally, for all those complaining, what else could the Flames have done? Tell the players to stop trying. Play Cooley and Ignatiev instead of Wolf and Vladar. What else could they have done? Great stuff on the text line at 960-960. I think that's a pretty good smattering of how Flames fans are feeling, hey?
Just to add in a little bit more context to make people feel better or worse about things, Minnesota, according to Tankathon, has the 8th easiest schedule. Flames are 12th, St. Louis 17th.
Okay.
That's the rest of the way.
Steinberg Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer providing them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is Flames Talk on a Monday. It's the final day of March. It's March 31st. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. And Vix, it is time for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. Yeah, Steinberg, Vickers from NHL.com. And now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Monday Daily Flames Roundtable. So gentlemen, as the calendar's about to flip, from March to April, the Flames are very much in the teeth of their stretch drive. And right now, Nazem Kadri is playing out of his mind. He has this team on his back. He has just an incredible stretch of six games with 7 goals and 10 points during this 6-game point streak. And he is doing everything in his power to try to will and drive this team to a postseason spot. Guys, when was the last time you can remember a singular or individual Flames player putting this team on their back quite the way like Nazem Kadri is right now?
Yeah, for me, I think Nazem Kadri is playing at a higher level than any Flames player since the 2021-2022 season, which I know won't surprise you or most of our listeners, when you know the Flames had arguably the best line in the NHL with Elias Lindholm between Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. And, you know, there were stretches during that season where all three of those guys carried the team in their own way, but more so the wingers. So Johnny Gaudreau finishes second or tied for second, ironically, with Jonathan Huberdeau in the Art Ross Trophy race with 115 points. Matthew Tkachuk was eighth with 104 points. Gaudreau had 40 goals. Tkachuk had 42 goals. And they were two of the most dominant players in the league in that 21-22 season. And of course, Johnny Gaudreau scored one of the, I would say, two biggest goals. I think it's the biggest goal. Matt Stajan would argue it's the second biggest goal since 2004. Of course, Stajan scored a huge goal in game 6 against the Canucks back in 2015. But, you know, Johnny Gaudreau scores the game-winning goal in overtime of game 7 against the Stars in 2022. So for me, Kadri's playing at a level that no Flame has played at since Gaudreau and Tkachuk a few years ago. And I'm not suggesting that he's playing at the level that they did, but he's playing at a pretty high level right now, as you guys know.
I don't disagree whatsoever when you look at Nazem Kadri and how he's produced. Even since the Bray of the Four Nations break, he's been absolutely phenomenal. He's been everything for the Calgary Flames as they push into the playoffs. And with that, I took this question and I kind of layered in circumstance a little bit, factor the time of year, the standings implications, what is on the line, what it's meant. And there were a couple that I would point to. I'd even look at Mark Giordano in 2018-19. He went on an incredible 7-game run that year. 5 goals, 13 points, averaged close to 26 minutes a night. But that team was a wagon. They were first in the Pacific Division when it was all said and done. So that one I'm kind of scrapping a little bit. I would even almost look at Dustin Wolf earlier this year, January 7th to 23rd. 5 of his 6 starts in that run, he was north of 920 on his save percentage. 4 of those 6, he was north of 929 or at 929. 2 goals or fewer in 5 of those 6 and 5 wins in that 6-game stretch. But I'm not going to pick a goalie because I want this to be more apples to apples. I'm going 2011-12 Jerome Iginla. He had a 6-game goal streak, 11 total points from March 4th to 15th, 2012. Flames were on a 5-game losing streak the second that that goal streak ended and missed the playoffs by 5 points. But they were in a situation similar, not dissimilar to what we're seeing right now with Kadri and the Flames trying to make up ground, trying to find some traction in the standings, trying to catch a team above them. That Jerome Iginla run of, what was it, 11 days? Again, six-game goal streak. I think he had 7 or 8 goals in that stretch, 11 total points. Really put the team on his back. That, of course, fell short, so maybe not the best comparison to be using at this exact moment. But I think when you factor in circumstance, time of year, what's on the line for the team itself, I look back to that 2011-12 Jerome Iginla stretch.
You took it super literal and went and looked at streaks. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Some digging.
I saw the assignment.
You got a lot of time in your hands today.
See, there's two for me, and it's not a specific stretch in time or anything. It's just more a feeling I had. Because, I mean, it's more than just this six-game stretch that Kadri, I think, has really been putting the group on his back. I mean, honestly, guys, all season, he's been the number one tone setter. He has been the skater that I think has dragged the Flames into it most consistently. And that's with no disrespect to Jonathan Huberdeau or Mackenzie Weegar or anybody else who's having really good seasons, because those guys are having incredible years as well. And I think Weegar's is having the best season of his NHL career. But what Kadri has done all year, and specifically now that the Flames are kind of at a spot where their margin of error doesn't exist anymore or is very, very slim, it's turned into a situation where, like, there's two that I remember, and I know the Flames still made the playoffs in 2015, but they would not have been in a spot to miss the playoffs after Mark Giordano got injured in that game against the New York Islanders. Had Giordano not been the incredible leader both on and off the ice he was that year, and honestly, the Flames had, you know, Johnny Gaudreau was having a great year, and Sean Monahan was having his best, his first 30-goal season, rather, but Mark Giordano was the guy that year, and his first two-thirds of the season prior to his season-ending injury was the biggest reason why the Flames were able to have that surprising campaign. And then once he went down, everybody was able to rally around his absence, but they wouldn't have been there had it not been for Mark Giordano's incredible run to that point. So I would say first time in a decade I can remember a singular player kind of being this important to the exploits of the Flames, because you go back to that 21-22 season or that 18-19 season and you had incredible lines. You had the purple Gatorade line in 18-19. You had the line you referenced with Tkachuk, Lindholm, and Gaudreau in 21-22. Just a singular guy. It's either Giordano in 14-15, or I take it back to those years coming out of the lockout that Jerome Iginla had. And those 2 years where I think Jerome had 93 and 98-point seasons back-to-back, that would be the other time I can remember that one guy has elevated the group to such an extent, and one guy you just counted on as, hey, you need a big goal, or you need a big moment, or you need somebody to orchestrate something huge, you're going to look to that guy. That's how impressed I am with what Nazem Kadri is doing right now, and that's no disrespect to what any of the other incredible seasons we've seen, but like, it's right now, it's Kadri, and everybody is on his train, and everybody is riding those coattails the way he's going right now. It's been pretty impressive to watch.
It sure has been. And I know the next guy we're going to talk about is Yegor Sharangovich, but it is really amazing that Nazem Kadri really can drag anybody into the battle, it seems, because I think that's what he did for number 17 on Saturday night. He had one of his best games in a while, but Kadri is on an absolute heater right now. And he's a guy who's been there and done that. Of course, won a Stanley Cup with the team the Flames will play tonight, the Avalanche, back in 2022. And remember how important he was when Nathan MacKinnon went down that season.
Yep.
You know, Kadri had to go from being the number two center to the number one center for a good chunk of the regular season, and then, you know, slid back to that 2C spot in the playoffs, but was instrumental. And I would argue the Avs really haven't been the same team without him. And he is trying to drag the Flames to the playoffs, and they're probably going to need to pick up 2 points against his former team tonight.
Just to put into context a little bit how he's been willing this group along, he's got 11 goals in 17 games since the Four Nations. If you extrapolate that over an 82-game schedule, that's a 53-goal pace. There are only 5 players in the NHL that have scored more goals than him coming out of that break. And we're talking about a team that has been absolutely starved for offense all season long, and he's a top 6 scorer league-wide since that. Like, You couldn't phrase it better than putting the team on his back. Yep. He has been absolutely phenomenal.
Now just two goals off of tying his career high, and with 10 games to go, a very, very strong chance that Nazem Kadri sets a new career high in goals in a single season, which at the age of 34 is pretty damn impressive. Look, we've known forever that this guy, that this guy's competitive juices are second to none, that this guy is the epitome of hates to lose. Like, this is a guy that you want setting the tone for you, and it's been huge this season. But I think if we're talking about Connor Zeri, or we're talking about Matt Coronado, or we're talking about other Dustin Wolf or Zane Parekh next year, or whoever we want to talk about, I think having Nazem Kadri doing what he's doing and doing what he's done and being in that locker room, I think is nothing but positive for this Flames group. Good on him. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. You mentioned Yegor Sharangovich, Willsie. Gets back in the lineup on Saturday, scores the opening goal of that 3-2 overtime loss to the Edmonton Oilers. You definitely wanted to see him get some offense in his return to the lineup after being a healthy scratch. And, you know, I don't know what our confidence levels are that this is going to happen, but if it did, if Yegor Sharangovich could get on somewhat of an offensive run here between now and the end of the regular season, not even just for the rest of this year, but bigger picture, what could it mean for him? What could it mean for this team?
Well, I think he's going to have to if the Flames are going to continue to push for a playoff spot in the final 10 games of the season, because while I wouldn't rule out a return for Connor Zeri before the end of the regular season, I wouldn't be holding my breath either based on what I've heard. So I think there's a chance, but I would suggest that it's probably an outside chance that he would be back and potentially playing in the left side of a line with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil, the Kadri and the kids line. So it's Yegor or Sharangovich's spot to lose right now. They slide him into that spot, and he snapped a 9-game goal to streak on Saturday night. Pretty ironic, guys, that the two goals the Flames got in that Battle of Alberta against the Oilers were both from guys who were healthy scratches the game before. Yeah. So Yegor Sharangovich scores, and so does Braden Pahal, who has his second career 2-point game on Saturday night. Kind of a strange circumstance there. But for Sharangovich, I chatted with him this morning. You hope that that goal gives him some confidence. And basically, he said the same thing to me that the coaches have been saying to us for quite some time when we've asked about Sharangovich, is that, yeah, he's got a great shot, but he's got to put himself in a position to use it. And it's not that the shot is any different than what it was last year when he led the team with 31 goals. It's just he hasn't put himself in a spot to use that shot. And, you know, in his defense, although he went through a little bit of this last year too, you know, he has bounced around, and he does have versatility in the sense that he can play all three, four positions, and he has, and he can play up and down your lineup, and he has. But, you know, last year he seemed to make the most of that, and this year that certainly hasn't been the case. But, you know, right now he's playing on the left side of one of the team's top two lines. I guess you can number them however you want to. Nazem Kadri is definitely this team's number one center, but, you know, I would argue that with Jonathan Huberdeau and Matt Coronado flanking Morgan Frost, you can make a strong argument that's the 1A line, and the Kadri line, the Kadri and the kids line, is the 1B line. But I guess that's a topic for another day. But they're probably going to need him to contribute offensively and to stay in that spot and keep it warm until Connor Zeri comes back, and maybe even to steal it. If Zeri comes back, if he plays well, and the coaches think that he's the best guy to play on the left side of that line with Kadri and Pospisil, maybe they leave him there. But he's going to be important because, as you guys have talked about, this is a Flames team that has struggled to score goals. He led this team in goals with 31 last season. He finished second in the team with 59 points last season. He just hasn't been the same player this season. And again, I don't know why. I don't know if it all stems from him getting hurt in the final preseason game and missing the first 7 regular season games. Sure, that was a setback, but that was also a really long time ago, and he's had plenty of time to kind of catch up to the rest of the league, and it just hasn't happened. But, you know, the one thing we keep hearing from coaches And I even heard it from the player today, is that he's got to put himself in a position to shoot the puck more. Yegor might feel like he has to do different things than the coaches do in order to do that. But we've heard a lot about the coaches, about his engagement level, his willingness to not be overly physical, but to get into battles and try to win his fair share. So he's going to be an important player. Everybody's going to be important for this team because they don't have a guy like Leon Draisaitl who can put the team on his back and carry them to victory almost single-handedly. So everybody's going to have to chip in. And if you're playing on the top six, you'd better chip in offensively.
Yeah, absolutely. We all know the uphill climb, the challenge that faces the Calgary Flames as it relates to catching one of the St. Louis Blues or the Minnesota Wild. When you lose Connor Zary, who's one of your more dynamic offensive talents, it's almost non-negotiable at this point with what's on the line that Sharon Govich finds some way to get going. Now, I'm not sitting here suggesting that it's an automatic that it'll happen. Again, you mentioned snapping a long goalless drought. He's only got 3 points in 15 games since that Four Nations break. I like to use that sort of data as sort of a reset because it was such a long time off for players. But someone needs to replace what Zary brings to this team, and it doesn't even necessarily need to be the puck handling skills, are just pure production. Calgary's still 30th in the NHL in goals per game at 2.60. Somebody's got to find the back of the net. And we know Sharon Govich historically has been a little bit streaky. And Wilsey, you pointed out, this is the leading goal getter last year for the Calgary Flames. So if he's able to dial it up any percent, that's better than the Sharon Govich that we've seen throughout the year. And it couldn't come at a more important time for this group because, again, it's not a favorable sort of setup for the Flames to make the playoffs. They're going to need contributions up and down the lineup from some unlikely heroes. And if Sharon Govich gets hot, I would classify him as an unlikely hero right now.
Guys, and with not trying to be dismissive of the final 10 games, because, you know, him getting hot could be huge for them, might mean nothing. We'll see. Like, we all know that it's an uphill climb for them to make it. And I think Sharon Govich going on an offensive run definitely is not going to hurt if they're going to be able to pull something pretty incredible off here. But I think the bigger picture is way more important. Like, if he can, if he can win back some of the confidence that we all know he's lost. I Sharon Govich is one of those guys that I think runs on confidence, good or bad, more so than many other players on this team. You know, it's funny, we talked about Kadri to kick off the segment, and you know, Nazem Kadri, when his confidence, like when things are going well, he's confident. When things aren't going well, he's confident. And it's something that he's learned over the years, that, you know, things work themselves out. And if you go through the right processes, eventually it'll turn around. I think Sharon Govich is a guy that when the confidence is high, he can really get on a roll. And when the confidence is low, it can really mess with what he's doing on the ice. And so if he can win back some of the confidence that we saw from him in the final two-thirds of last season, in the final eighth of this season, that could be massive for just his overall mindset going into the offseason. Whether they make the playoffs or not, I think it would be massive. And I think also from a Flame standpoint, guys, it would maybe have them breathing a little easier knowing that next year the five-year extension kicks in, and you couldn't blame anybody in Flames management who'd be like, oh boy, like this is a really, really rough year for a guy that we just signed to a five-year extension. So I think in the bigger picture, him having a good 10-game finish is the most important thing. And then obviously it would have the little picture positive implications too, Wills. You are, you know, definitely isn't going to hurt a team star for offense if one of their main contributors from a season ago is able to pick it up down the stretch. And now I guess we see if that is in the cards or not.
And so you talk about Nazem Kadri and how when he's producing, he's confident, and when he's not producing, he's still confident. And you talk about how his process always stays the same. So I think he's different in both ways from Yegor Sharon Govich, who does tend to run hot and cold. And let's hope that the goal he scored against the Oilers on Saturday night gets him on a hot streak heading into the final 10 games of the regular season. But you know, I would argue that his process isn't always where it needs to be, where, you know, it's hard to question Kadri's work ethic. Even when he's not scoring goals and producing points, he's generally playing the right way. And Now, sometimes the puck just won't go in for you. And he's gone through stretches like that in his three seasons with the Flames. But, you know, he's confident that eventually it's going to turn around because he's kind of playing the same way. So if Sharon Govich could become more consistent in his process and in how he plays the game, I do think the goals and the points will follow. Because, guys, I said this last week, I'll say it again. Good players have bad seasons. I still think that there's a good player in there, and I think confidence or lack thereof has certainly impacted his season, but I also think that maybe the process not being where it needs to be has had a big impact as well.
And my only concern about a late season confidence boost or a surge in production is it really going to translate to next season when you have 4 months off? Does a summer kill any of that momentum? And I just think back, well, this is a player that had 31 last year. He should be riding high coming into this season. And again, I don't think you can discount the injury suffered in the third period of the final preseason game any. And that's probably what started maybe a little bit of this confidence spiral. But I do also wonder, does 10 games erase the other, not that he played a full 72, but the other six months of not being able to have your game where you want it?
Does it erase it? Probably not.
But it's better to end your season on a high note as opposed to a low note. So I won't totally discredit it. I just do wonder if, okay, well, that was 4 months ago by the time training camp rolls around again. Does that still count?
I don't think it can hurt. I mean, with the way this season is
going
on. Yeah, I if you're the Flames or the player, I think you'd take anything positive between now and the end of the regular season. See if he's got it in him. For now, Willsy, great stuff as always. We'll do it again all over on Tuesday. Thank you, pal.
All right, guys, enjoy the game tonight.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. And it's time to check in on the number one affiliate of the Calgary Flames. Every Monday, we check in with the Calgary Wranglers, and that's what we're doing right now. Wranglers over the weekend fall 8-3 on the road in Bakersfield. That was Friday night. Then a 3-1 loss to San Diego on Saturday. They've got two with Tucson in Arizona coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. Wranglers sitting 32-25-7 on the season. They are sixth in the Pacific Division. And right now we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Say hello to Calgary Wranglers head coach Joe Cirella, who joins us here on the program. Joe, appreciate the time as always, and really appreciate chatting every week. I'm just it's Pat and Aaron, and I'm just curious, kind of how would you kind of evaluate what you saw this weekend? I know the result's not where you wanted them to be, but in terms of the process and the games themselves, how would you look back at them?
Hey, Pat. Hey, Aaron. Thanks for having me. The first game, I thought we came out, had a great first period. Actually, in both games. The first game, you know, we just let it slip away in the second period. With a young group that is still feeling their way with new players being added and a fragile group, I think that we let the game slip away, and especially in Bakersfield, I thought we had a pretty good 40 minutes in San Diego. Was 1-1 going into the third. And again, a little mistake and ends up costing us, their go-ahead goal. And then they got a power play goal. And, we had some chances when we pulled the goalie. But, it's about the consistency. Again, development, guys having expanded roles because of the situation and, getting opportunities. And, right now, like I said, a fragile group that, we just have to figure a way to do it for 60 minutes. And, that'll give us the best opportunity to win. And, you know, we just keep plugging away. You know, we have to figure this out. You know, playoffs are coming. We're a good team because we've shown it for parts of the game, and now it's just a matter of getting over the hump, getting that confidence, and if we could do that, we'll go forward.
Joe, and you know, you mentioned the playoffs, and you're in a tooth and nail battle right now, and trying to lock down a spot. Just how much are you learning about some of your guys and some of your players as you're in a fight like this, or what can you learn about your players in a run or a stretch like they're in right now, and with how high the stakes are right now?
Well, you get a good feel for it, you know, in the sense that, you know, how do they react when there is a little adversity? And right now we're struggling to find it. And, you know, you keep putting them in those situations, hoping, you know, from their past experience, like, you know, some of these guys are, you know, veteran guys as well. I'm not just saying it's the young guys. And over the past couple of years, we really haven't had this type of situation. And, you know, yeah, you do find that, you know, some of the guys are struggling with it. All we can do is show them video and give them options of, you know, if it happens again, this is when you got to learn to, you know, sometimes you just have to maybe put it by the guy. You don't have to try beating them one-on-one, and, you know, show them different scenarios where, because you did this, this is what it leads to, opposed to, hey, you know, just put it in a safe area and we can get, you know, live another day, so to speak. And, you know, in hockey, things happen quickly, and you have to react to it. And the guys that, you know how to do that, you know, are the ones that usually learn and get other opportunities, because these are opportunities that these guys have to realize that you can't be making these mistakes in the NHL, because you know, you get one opportunity. And if you make that mistake up in, you know, with the big club, that, you know, you might not get another chance. And, you know, they have to understand that. You hope they don't do it, you know, multiple times. But, you know, right now we're finding that we're doing it, and we're not in the luxury of, you know, a lot of times, you know, with the injuries right now that we have. You know, and the players that we have here is, you know, sometimes they might have to sit a game even with us. And now we're getting these new young guys coming in, you know, on tryouts, and they're going to get the opportunities to see if they can do it. And, you know, that's how you have to assess these situations, and you hope that, you know, they can figure it out quite quickly.
Joe, and kind of on that same point, you know, you've got some, you know, young players that are in their first or second year of playing pro hockey, and you know, this is a new situation for them, being in a American League playoff fight and fighting tooth and nail trying to get in the playoffs. How big can this be for development for some of those players? How important is whether, you know, regardless of what happens between now and the beginning of the postseason, how big can this stretch be for some of your younger players?
Well, as I was saying, I think it's they're in a situation that they probably never have been in before. So it's a good evaluation on our part. You know, to make sure that, you know, everyone's getting this opportunity. You know, they're probably being put in and asked to be doing things that they probably wouldn't be, you know, asked to do so frequently right now, because, you know, it seems that every shift is very important now. And, you know, when we have a, you know, like I said, our last couple of games, we've had some, you know, good first period, a good second period. And then something happened that, you know, all of a sudden it's like a snowball effect. So, you know, I think it's important for them to, you know, the longer the game goes and you stay consistent and stay within the plan, I feel that, you know, it's a great evaluator for them to get these opportunities to be in this type of situation. So, you know, it's great development for them. And, you know, the ones that will thrive in it are the ones that can figure it out and, you know, be reliable. And those are the ones that are going to get the opportunity more so.
We're chatting with Joe Cirella. He is the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He joins us Mondays here on Flames Talk. Joe, I want to ask you about one player before Aaron maybe hit some more individual names with you. But it was a cool story when we saw Calgary product Carter Wilkey signed and brought into the Wranglers last week. And he played for you that first game or played his first game with you over the weekend. Tell us what a guy like Carter Wilkey can add to this Wranglers group.
Well, Carter, you know, it was great getting a right-hand centerman. And, you know, we've seen him before at our development camp, so there's a bit of familiarity there. You know, centermen are hard to come by, right? Now having an option, you know, to have that right shot, I think it's very important. And, you know, we eased him into the game, and I thought, you know, he showed quite well. He showed he had some skill. You know, he was good on the forecheck with his line. So, you know, it was good to see, and, you know, I'm glad to give, you know, these players that opportunity to show what they can do.
Joe, before I get into some individual names, I did want to ask you, during a stretch like this, are there any young players, whether they're first year, second year, third year pros, that have surprised you with their leadership as your group tries to navigate through this?
Yeah, you know, right now, like, even a guy, like, I'm going to talk about the goaltender, Ignacio Iggy, coming in, you know, gave us great opportunity last game. So it was good to see, you know, that he comes in and, you know, he did his part. You know, we have to give him some, you know, some scoring support. We only scored the one in San Diego on the power play. So, you know, that's something that, you know, we have to, you know, address. And then, you know, a guy like Hunter Buskevich, who, you know, under this tough times, I thought he's handled himself quite well. And, you know, playing probably extended minutes, you know, on the power play, 5-on-5. You know, I thought, you know, he's played well in this little stretch, you know, in his, you know, the role that we expect him to continue to develop.
Want to ask you about Ignacev, since you brought him up. How have you seen him progress from his arrival in Penticton and rookie camp and main camp to where he is today in terms of adjusting to the pro game, getting used to the pace? It could be a big change for a goaltender coming from Europe.
Yeah. You know, he, you know, probably himself will attest to that, you know, the first couple months were tough on him, you know, getting, you know, limited starts, you know, playing behind a goalie that was lights out, probably missed a few starts because, you know, how well Cooley was playing at the start of the year. But then when he was called upon, you know, probably within the last couple months, you know, his last 10 starts, other than the one blip, he's, you know, he's played quite well. I think he's found his game with, you know, the adjustments that him and Scapper, our goaltending coach, has, you know, worked with and, you know, maybe changed a few things around, you know, to the North American style game. And I think it's done wonders for him. And,
like I said, he's, you know, in his starts, he's been giving us an opportunity to win, and that's what you ask your goaltenders to do.
How's his adjustment been away from the rink? It's one thing to come to North America and sort of adapt your game for the North American style. It's another thing when you're European coming over, and it can be a little bit of a period of adjustment off the ice as well. Have you seen him sort of handle that transition pretty well?
Yeah, and we usually see that. And, you know, we have another Finnish player with us, Jermo, the defenseman, and, you know, I know they spend a lot of time together. They hang out together. So I think it's good for both of them to, you know, feed off each other. But, you know, I think the group is a good group, that they're very inclusive on everybody and, you know, help each other, you know, help one another out, whether it be, you know, in Calgary or on the road. You know, it's a pretty tight-knit group, which we're fortunate to have with our leadership. So I think it's, you could see them, you know, adapting to the North American style quite well.
Last one for you, Joe. You've got Tucson coming up in Arizona on Tuesday and Wednesday, and a real big opportunity for your group maybe to put a team behind you away and solidify your spot that much more. Just set us up for these next two games, a couple of games in Tucson's barn. What does the challenge look like for your group?
Well, you know, again, we've you know, made them aware of the importance of these games. I think with, you know, the new players coming in, it gives us a fresh breath of new life, so to speak. And, you know, we prepared like these are playoff games. This is a little mini series. And I think we have to take that approach going into, you know, tomorrow night.
Joe, appreciate the time as always. Hey, good luck in Tucson. We'll check in again next week, but definitely all the best this week as you wrap up this four-game roadie. Thanks for doing this as always.
Okay, Pat, Aaron, thank you very much. Have a great day.
You as well. He's Joe Cirella. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He joins us Mondays to take a look at the number one affiliate of the Calgary Flames, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. Our outstanding producers, Shan Virgie, Cam Hughes this hour. Thank you, boys, as this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.